Good to be with you this morning. We're once again going to, we're going to be studying again some of the thoughts that we started last week on really the basis of why we believe in God. And in going through this series, I hope you think about what we're trying to do is not necessarily give a proof that there's an absolute proof that there is a God, but to bring the foundations for our faith, to know that we don't have just a blind faith. It's based upon the evidences. And we introduce the idea of the origins of the creation, the origins of the day. We're going to get the laws of nature, the origin of life itself, the origin of our minds. Where did these things come from? Did they come to us from God, or did they just happen? And I believe that when you look at the evidences, it gives us a firm foundation for our faith and helps us to understand that this is the best worldview to have to look at those things around us. That this is a reason to believe in our God, and especially to believe in Jesus Christ as our Savior and the love that God has shown for us. If you take a look, we're going to very briefly go back and we think about the beginning of the universe. Throughout really the history of modern thought, going back to the Greeks, people have always looked at the universe, and it's easy to see this, as always been in existence. In some form or another, the universe has always been here and always would be here. But starting about 100 years ago, things started to change. And I'm going to use an example of a tennis ball, and hopefully I'll do this without doing too much harm or anything. But if you throw a tennis ball up, and if you've ever played tennis, you know you're supposed to hit it at the very peak. That's when, if you ever watch these super guys like Federer or any of these tennis players, they hit the ball exactly when they throw it up, when it stops up there. And they hit it, of course, very well. Now, I want you to think about when you throw this tennis ball up, when is that tennis ball not moving? It goes up, it's moving the whole way up, it's moving the whole way down. But there's an instant of time at the very peak when it's not moving. Now, how long is that instant of time? If you take a look at it, how long is it up there when it's not moving? Very, very, it's really just an instant, right? It's an unstable condition up there. It can't just sit there. Really, it's really a principle in all of our lives. All of our lives are always changing. We're never static. This idea that the universe has just always been and always is just sort of a static universe is an unstable thought. And what Einstein started with about 100 years ago, though he didn't like the idea, was that the universe is not static. It's moving. And in fact, Hubble, if you remember Hubble, the Hubble telescope was named after, he looked at the stars in all different directions, those on this side and that side, and he saw everything is moving away from us. The universe is getting bigger and bigger. It's expanding. It's not a static universe. And this idea of expanding universe pointed to it had to have a beginning. And of course, we looked at last week that the Bible has always said that. Though science never thought that. They always looked at the universe as always being static and not changing. But it had a beginning. The final idea that came into being that showed the beginning of the universe came from a man named Penzias and Wilson. Around 1960, and it's amazing, because when I started school, and I can remember in elementary school, we were given two different ideas for the universe. One, that it had a beginning. But the other is called the steady state. And I don't know if any of you remember. The steady state is the idea that the universe expands and then comes back and just oscillates back and forth. And by doing that, it didn't have to have a beginning. And so scientists really liked that idea because they didn't like this idea that it had an actual beginning. Because if it has a beginning, you've got to have what caused it. And they didn't have an answer for that. You were here for our Sunday school class. Lewis brings out the idea in his book. If you have all the information that you can have, it's not going to give you the idea of what is beyond our mature universe. And that's really what science started to realize. Penza and Wilson discovered what we call background radiation. And when they discovered this, it was sort of the last nail that concluded that our universe had a beginning. and that it wasn't just an oscillating universe. One of the interesting comments that was made about this time was made by the, you may have read the book of Stephen Hawking, and he's a very famous scientist today that has the idea that really that there is, he's an atheist, then goes through the idea that his belief in the universe and time. But his thesis advisor, when they finally gave up on the steady state theorem, he said the steady state theorem has a sweeping beauty that for some unaccountable reason, the architect of the universe appears to have overlooked. That's an interesting comment if you think about it. The architect of the universe is who? Of course, it's God. And he didn't want the universe to have a beginning. But when they discovered this background radiation, they won the Nobel Prize for that a few years later. I want you to notice what Pensa said about this. This is a Nobel Prize winner. He said, the best data we have concerning the beginning of the universe, what some people call the Big Bang, are exactly what I would have predicted had I nothing to go on but the five books of Moses, the Psalms, and the Bible as a whole. This is what the Bible has always given us. And some of the verses we've looked at over the last couple of weeks. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. God was before time and space, before our universe. By the word of the Lord, the heavens were made, and by the breath of his mouth, all their hosts. And by faith, we understand that the universe was created by the word of God. So what is seen was not made out of what was visible. We believe that our universe had a beginning. And this beginning, of course, was when God created the heavens and the earth. But this morning I want to go another step further and talk about the laws of nature, or the sort of the natural laws of science around us. And think about this universe of ours. And one of the things that you start seeing when you look at the universe is this order. That this is not just a random universe. If it just randomly became like it is, how do we look at the laws of nature? And in particular, how do we look at mathematics? One of my great pleasures in my life is the study of mathematics. And one of the ideas that come forth and is brought out by a number, we're going to take a number of people, is how is it that we can take a look at this universe of ours, the science, and explain it by simple mathematical formulas? You think about the law of gravity, if you've ever looked at it, if you remember, it's just about three or four terms long. It's a very short little equation that Isaac Newton came up with that completely describes how nature works. Clerk Maxwell came up with what's called Maxwell's equations. These are three simple equations. They're not real simple. They're second-order differential equations, if you remember differential equations. But it's just three. You can write them down real short. Three little equations that completely describe all of electromagnetic radiation, light, the radio waves, and three little equations. And there's many others we can take a look at. Schrodinger equation completely describes quantum mechanics and what all electronics, all your little iPhones and stuff, the TVs, all based upon quantum mechanics that these little equations describe. How is it that by simple mathematical formulas we can describe the universe? One writer, this is a Nobel Prize winner, Wigner, puts it this way. He says, the miracle or the appropriateness of the language of mathematics for the formulation of the laws of physics is a wonderful gift that we neither understand nor deserve. One of the writer in Oxford, thus the appeal of the general intelligibility of the nature, its structure in accordance with mathematical principles which can be understood by the human mind. He goes on, it is perhaps no accident that modern science really began with the clear realization that the Christian God was a rational creator and not an arbitrary personal agent. And Einstein simply said it this way, the most incomprehensible thing about the world is that it is comprehensible. In other words, one of the things that amazed Einstein was the fact that we could understand. A lot of times today we look at science and say, well, science explains everything, and people say we've sort of eliminated God. But these men looked at it exactly the opposite. The very fact that we could understand the universe and explain it by simple little equations shows us that it has order and design. Where did that order design come from? There must have been a mind behind it. And that's the idea that you see. It's always amazed me with mathematics. One of the things I've studied, you may have, in electromagnetic, there's a little constant called Euler's number. It's done by a little e. And it comes from logarithms. And I know you remember from Algebra 2, the study of logarithms, right? Well, if you know your logarithms, you could actually derive the Euler's number of e. And one of the things that amazed me when you go through derivations, you start deriving equations like Einstein's equation, actually some of Clark Maxwell's equations, and you go from e, and all of a sudden pi pops up. Well, pi has nothing to do with logarithms. It's the circle divided by its diameter. What does pi have to do with logarithms? But there it is. And it's always amazing. It's sort of like these magic numbers that occur over and over again in mathematics. One of those magic numbers is called I, or electrical engineers, we usually use J. And it's what we call an imaginary number. Now, you might think, why would a mathematician want to have an imaginary number? You know, but it turns out that we need it. We need to have this number that doesn't really exist, but we want to play like it does really exist, and so we call it an imaginary number. In fact, I took a whole graduate-level mathematics course in the study of imaginary numbers. But imaginary number is a number that it's the square root of a negative number. And if you ever remember, I know you all remember square roots, right? From Algebra 1, you know, square roots. It's when you have two numbers that multiply together to give a number. Well, you can't have a negative two. If you have a negative number, you know, you multiply two negative numbers together, you always get a positive. So you can't have a square root of a negative number. But it turns out that we'd like to have one. It makes a lot of stuff, so we just make it up. It's an imaginary number. And if you go through mathematics, you run into it. But the whole point is that through the mathematics, which we all thought up, I mean, nobody was born knowing about imaginary numbers. You had to study to learn these kind of things. But through the study of mathematics, we can describe the universe. And we do it very, very well. Why would that be so if the universe just happened? You see, it points to the idea that there's a mind behind the universe. A mind sort of like ours, or really more precisely, our mind is sort of like it. We were made in the image of God. And the very fact that we have a mind that can sort of understand and even explain so much of the phenomena of the universe points to the idea that there's a mind behind it. So the very laws of nature that some would say, with the laws of nature, you know, the laws of science, we don't need God anymore, those very laws point to God. They point to the order of the universe. They point to the idea that there is a mind behind our universe. The very physical laws of nature do that. The next idea I like we brought up a little bit last week is that these laws of nature, the laws of science that we now can explain so much of our universe, show that the universe itself is very fine-tuned exactly the way that it is. Now, we looked very quickly, if you think about the Earth, we know we're exactly the right distance of the sun. Mars and Venus wouldn't work for people to live on those planets. And it's got the right tilt and the right rotational axis and magnetic field. And on we could go with the Earth. It's just exactly right for us to live here. And if any of those things were just a little bit different, the moon was a little different, farther away or closer, if it was a little bit bigger, the tides would be all wrong and we wouldn't be able to live here. But there's more than just the Earth itself. There's these constants like the gravitational constants and Boltzmann's constants, and there's a whole list of them. If any of these numbers was just a little teeny bit different, we couldn't be here. The universe couldn't support life. And so scientists take a look at all these different constants and all the what some call the fine-tuning of the universe. So, well, how can this be? Well, they come up with basically three different answers. The first is, well, it just had to be this way, what they call physical necessity. But the more they look at it, even the great physicists, many of which are atheists, realize, well, you really can't explain it that way. These numbers really could be a little different one way or the other. And so then the second way they come up with, well, chance. It's just lucky that it happened this way. Maybe our universe is just a one out of a billion kind of thing. But let me give you an example that William Lane Craig in his book gives that I thought was very, very well stated. If you think about a man, he uses Bob, his wife's going to give him a new car for his birthday. So he goes to pick up his new car, and his license plate reads BOB 8849. Now Bob was born on August 8th, 1949, and so he looks at his license plate, and it's got BOB 8849, his name and his birthday. Now what would you think Bob would think when he sees that license plate? What do you think? Well, boy, that was a one in a million chance that my name and my birthday happened to be on my license plate. Do you think he'd think that? Or do you think he'd think, man, my wife really loves me and she went to a lot of trouble to get that license plate for me? Now, which of those two things makes the most sense? We look at our universe and we think of, and we see these things coming together. Did it just happen by chance? And then somebody will say, well, what about the lottery? If I actually tried to calculate, I don't know if I did it exactly right, that the percentage of if you actually would get your name and your birthday on your license plate is roughly 1 in 200 million. And so it could, you say, well, that could happen. Somebody could win the lottery. But think about if somebody won the lottery. It's roughly 1 in 100 million. A while back, somebody in Brevard County won one of these super duper lottery, you know, with like $100 million or so. So people do win the lottery. But what would you think if somebody you down the street won the lottery? Then the next week you find out the same person won the lottery again. Well, you might think, man, I wonder if that ever happened before. Probably nobody's ever won the lottery twice in a row, but it could happen, and it did. But what would you think if that person won the lottery 3 weeks in a row? Now, wouldn't you think, well, there's something going on here? Wouldn't you think that? Would you think that really was just luck, that the same person won the lottery? What if they won it every day for like a month or two? That's the kind of odds that we're talking about. It's the kind of odds that cannot be explained by random or chance. They really show us that when you take a look at the universe, you see design. You see a mind behind it. And that's what we've been taking a look at in our Sunday morning class with C.S. Lewis. And I hope you can take a, when you take a look at the creation. We started this morning, I can go back, and if you look at the very first view graph we had, this is on Immanuel Kant's grave. And he brought up the idea, this is actually on his tomb, it's a famous tomb over somewhere in Germany. It's actually written in German, but I didn't put the German up there, though I know most of you probably read German just fine, but I don't, so I put the English version of it. But Kant basically said, when you look at the stars above you and the moral law within you, you know that there's something more out there. That's what he's saying. And I hope that's what you start to see in our Bible classes. When you take a look at the creation, and he just used the starry host above you, or you take a look at that, knowing that right and wrong within us. When you know when you see those things, you start seeing, yes, there is something beyond me. There is a God. And that's what we're looking at this morning, is the idea that there is a God. Let me get back to where we were. The last point I'd like to make this morning is that idea of the natural law. This is what we've really been studying in our Sunday school classes. But it is the idea that we each have this idea within us of what's fair and what's just, what's right and what's wrong. Where did that come from? And the point that C.S. Lewis makes in his, if you start to take a look at it, is this idea all of us have. We have this idea that this is fair or this is not fair, or this is right, but that's wrong. Where did we get that standard from? It's embedded in every one of us. This idea of fairness and right and wrong, where did it come from? It's beyond us. And that's the point he makes. If it's beyond us, then it points us in the direction of our God. The idea of right and wrong. I'd like to look at two more scriptures. The first one comes from Psalms. And notice what the psalmist says about the laws of the universe. He says, "Forever, O Lord, your word is firmly fixed in the heavens. Your faithfulness endures for all generations. You have established the earth, and it stands. By your appointments they stand this day, for all things are your servants. If your law had not been my delight, I would have perished by my affliction. I would never forget your precepts, for by them you have given me life. Now what the psalmist is saying really points to both sets of laws. He says, first, you fixed the heavens. You made the things that are. You made the laws that govern the universe. And you made the laws that govern my life. And those are the two things I'd like for you to think about this morning. God made the laws that, laws of nature, the laws of gravity, and whatever else that governs the universe. He fixed those. He made those laws. But he also made the laws that govern how we live. And that's what the psalmist refers to as your precepts. They give you life. When you start living according to God's plan for your life, according to his precepts, his commandments, then you gain true life. And that came because this is the Creator. This is the Creator of everything. And it's his laws that bring us life. Let's turn back now to our scripture reading this morning. And notice how Paul brings these ideas out to us. He said, the God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by man, nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all mankind life and breath and everything. And he made from one man and every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and boundaries of their dwelling place, that they would seek God, and the hope that they might feel their way towards him and find him. Yet he is actually not far from any one of us. Now, here Paul brings out three ideas as we close our lesson today. The first is God created everything. But then he goes on down. Now, not only does he create everything, but he governs everything now. Notice he said all men came from one man and he gave them allotted places and boundaries in which to live. He's the one that made the things the way that they are. And his laws still govern everything, both the universe and our lives. But he did this for a purpose. And this, don't miss this part. He did it for a particular purpose. He did it because he wanted to be close to every one of us. He wanted us to seek him. He's not a God of afar that created everything. And it's amazing to think about that this God that created the heavens and the earth wants to have a relationship with you. That's what Paul is saying. He wants you to seek him. He has poured out his love for you in the creation, and he gave us his own son. As Paul brings out, if he gave us his own son, will he not give us everything? He's a God that's poured out his love for you in the universe and in giving him himself when he gave us his son. This is the God that we serve, the creator of the heavens and the earth, the creator of the order of the universe that we see. He's the mind behind all that you can take a look at. He's the one that governs everything now. And he's the God that wants to be your God. He wants you to seek him. He wants you to reach out because he's not far from any one of us. He wants to be close to us. He's a God that loves you. One of the ideas that we just touched on today is that idea of love. A lot of times we look at the creation and it is impersonal. There's a lot of things about it that is. But it goes on down step by step till we get to Jesus and we start understanding the love that God has for us. I think that love is shown in the creation itself. But it is sort of maybe impersonal when you look at the stars. But as Kant said, don't look at just the stars. Look at that moral law within you. And you start seeing the love of God for every single one of us. This morning, hopefully, some of the things that was brought out in the scriptures and what we've talked about will increase your faith in our God. And you will know that the God that we serve is a God that truly loves you and wants to be with you. Wants to be with you eternally. He's offered you eternal life, which is found in Jesus Christ. If you need to come to his call in any way, won't you come as together we stand and sing.